Trying to see a game?
Tyler Bischoff is...
And are they both trying not to laugh at the word duty?
Yeah.
Technically correct.
Why is she speaking like...
Because they learned English from Professor Magoo over there.
Relax, we'll be in and out. Anyway, you've never seen my lab.
Oh, great. I get to see your nerd lab.
Hello, NFL in Wyoming. New UNLV women's soccer coach Jenny Ruiz will join the show a little bit later. There is a new free agent cornerback, so of course we have to link him to the Raiders. That is our duty around here. And today is the 30th anniversary of UNLV winning its first ever Final Four game over Georgia Tech. We'll get a little bit into that and rewatch that tonight on Twitter. We're going to start, though, with some Derek Carr stats. Ready for some Derek Carr numbers? And one of my favorite, well, I guess I should say least favorite narratives in sports, but one of my favorite narratives to yell about in sports, and that is the idea of clutch. Because Derek Carr, in his career, has had 45 chances to lead his team on a game-winning drive in the fourth quarter.
Good God.
45 shots. That is according to Scott Kazmer of Pro Football Focus. So one of the most touted stats about Derek Carr in his NFL career is that he has 19 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter in his career. And since he entered the league, he's in the top five in that stat. It's one of the most positive Derek Carr stats you can put out there because he does have a lot of game-winning drives in the fourth quarter. However, that stat isn't usually fully kept, right? That stat is just how many times has he led a game-winning drive in the fourth quarter. It's not kept really as a success rate, right? We don't usually know how many drives he's had with that opportunity to have a game-winning drive in the fourth quarter. So he's had 19 in his career. Thanks to Scott Kazmer, we know how many shots Derek Carr has had to lead a game-winning drive. He's done it 19 times. There have been 45 games where he has had that opportunity. Now, it's not 45 drives, it's 45 games, because in some of those games, he's had multiple chances to do it. So it's not 45 drives, but it's 45 games where he's had the ball down by one score in the fourth quarter. That's what he's had. He's pulled off a win 19 times. So what that works out to be is a win percentage of 42%. The reason that's interesting is because it confirms what we know about close games. Derek Carr's win percentage in close comeback situations is 42%. Derek Carr's win percentage as a quarterback, period, is 41%. The Raiders win at basically the same exact rate, whether they're down by one in the fourth quarter or at any other situation with Derek Carr at quarterback. They win 41 or 42% of their games. That's who Derek Carr is. The theory of close games is simply this. It's a toss-up. Right? There's no such thing as clutch. Winning close games is pretty much, in any sport, is pretty much a toss-up, right? Or toss-up might not be the fairest way to do it. Like if you're a good team, you're more than likely going to win some close games than if you're a bad team. When you get in those close games, you're more than likely going to lose them. But at the end of the day, it's still a toss-up. And Derek Carr shows us it's just a reflection of who you are in every situation. That's just who you are as a quarterback. He's going to win 41, 42% of his games. Doesn't matter if he's down by seven in the fourth quarter. It doesn't matter if he's up by seven in the fourth quarter. They're going to win 41, 42% of their game. So clutch isn't real. And one of the best examples as to why clutch isn't real is the game they played against Detroit last year. It's probably my favorite game when it comes to proving that clutch isn't real, because last season against Detroit, Derek Carr had a game-winning drive in the fourth quarter. He took the Raiders down, scored a touchdown to take a 31-24 lead with 2 minutes and 10 seconds left against the Lions. That was the winning score. That was the game-winning drive in that game. But the reason that I love this as an example is because the Raiders offense had 3 drives in the fourth quarter. They had 2 drives earlier in the fourth quarter where they were up 24-17. And they had a chance to go down the field and take a 2-score lead in the fourth quarter. Essentially, they had a chance to end that game. First time they get the ball, lose 7 yards, go 3 and out. Second time they get the ball, they gain 7 yards, but also go 3 and out. The Lions end up scoring to tie the game, and then Derek Carr and the Raiders go down and score to have his game-winning drive. It wouldn't have been necessary if they hadn't gone 3 and out on the other 2 drives. If they had gone down and scored earlier in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, had they just won?
Yeah, they would have won the game by 2 scores. They would have won the game without needing the game-winning drive. Instead, it adds to the sort of fake clutch stat that we have that is game-winning drives and what Derek Carr has done, right? It doesn't matter. You often, in every game, you're going to get multiple chances to go down the field to quote-unquote win the game. Sometimes that's going to happen in the third quarter, right? Sometimes that drive is going to come before the final drive of the game. The whole final drive of the game thing is kind of a myth. It's not real.
One of my favorite, okay, well, Skip Bayless is an idiot to begin with, and he's got that whole weird homophobia thing too, but one of my favorite criticisms he ever had of Aaron Rodgers was he had very few late game comebacks, and it's like, well, yeah, he's normally winning by like 13, so yeah, he's not going to have very many comebacks because he's good. And now recently, yeah, he's had a ton of them, but at the time it was just such a stupid idea. Oh, in the 2 times that he was down in the fourth quarter, one of them he came back.
I am curious what other quarterbacks are in terms of like this stat, because it's widely kept how many times a quarterback does have a game-winning drive. But nobody keeps track of how many actual chances they had to lead a game-winning drive. Like, Scott Kazmir went through game logs to figure that out. So you'd have to do that for every quarterback, because nobody's actually keeping track of that. Because I am curious how many quarterbacks there are. And I would venture to guess the majority of quarterbacks have a similar record, right? The majority of quarterbacks, their record in close games is the same as their record in all games. Like, that would be my, if you were a quarterback and you've won 60% of your games, you've probably won 60% of your close games too.
Marcus Mariota has 9 fourth quarter comebacks and 11 game winning drives.
So I'm curious, how many chances has he had? Like, and again, we'd have to go through the game logs of all of Marcus Mariota's starts to figure that out, because he's probably had lots of chances. But yeah, like, he might be 9 of.
And in one of those, he threw a pass to himself.
He did. He caught it for a touchdown, right? Yeah, that's one of great play by Marcus Mariota. Who needs wide receivers? You can just throw it to yourself. Like, Marcus Mariota might be 9 of 100, right? Like, he might, has he started 100 games? He might be 9 of 100 in his career, which would be terrible.
He started like 64.
Okay, he might be 9 of 60 in his career, which would not be very good at all. But he's probably, you know, 9 of 20 is probably what Marcus Mariota is in those scenarios. Would be my guess. So that's probably where all quarterbacks are. If you've won 45% of the games, you've probably won 45% of your chances to come back.
I will say he's 29 and 32 is his considered his like starting record. So at least of his 29 wins, more than a third of them have been just him going, oh crap, we're losing in the fourth quarter.
Well, Carr's in the same boat, because I think he has 39 career wins. So he's basically at half of
his
career wins.
He's got that many wins?
Yeah, I think it's 39 and 55? I don't know. I was looking
at his total wins. That 12-win season.
It's doing a lot of work for him. Well, the 7-win season did a lot of work for him last year. But I think it's 39 that he's got career wins. So 19 of his, basically half of his wins are, they come back and win it in the fourth quarter. Because, and a lot of that has to do with the defense. They're always losing in the fourth quarter, right? He's had, like, his career is probably like the worst defensive team you could have over a 6-year span. Like, Derek Carr has not been lucky with the defense he's played with, so that's part of it. So clutch isn't real. Don't believe in clutch. I want to get to one other thing. This was an idea from Pro Football Talk on how to play the NFL season, and this is very similar to the NBA in Vegas idea, and apparently the Premier League in England is also considering this. But this is from Pro Football Talk. The NFL takes all teams to a location free from coronavirus, tests everyone on the way in, and then sequesters the entire league for the full duration of the season. It's essentially the NBA in Vegas plan. The Premier League's considering it too, except this would be an entire NFL season rather than the end of those seasons.
All right, so it really will. It really will be like, let's find the flattest spot in Montana, yep, and we'll build the field. And here's the problem. People will, not to quote Field of Dreams, but people will come.
Yes, they'll just drive up.
They'll come be like, do you understand? I've been in my house for a month.
So one of the biggest problems is finding a place with no cases. right? Every state has over 100 cases at this point. Even Alaska is over 100 cases. Yeah, every state is over 100 cases. And you also have to have, you have to be somewhere that has football fields. You shook your head at no to football fields.
No.
What are they going to play on?
Grass?
Yeah, so you got to have football fields.
No, you need just grass.
You got to have somewhere and you got to have somewhere for people to sleep.
Grass?
And eat.
Grass. All right.
So
All right. I found the flaw in my plan.
So you've got to basically have a big facility that can actually pull this off, and I don't know if that exists anywhere. Pro Football Talk suggested somewhere in West Virginia.
Of all the states?
Yeah, West Virginia. They don't have very many cases either. They're one of like the bottom five or six of cases.
They're dealing with some other issues. Yeah.
So I don't think it's plausible to find a place, but if they can, I love the idea of an entire sports league for NBA, NFL, Premier League going to one location and just everybody has to live there for months. Like, because I want more than just the games on TV. I want reality TV show type stuff. Because that's going to be unbelievable.
Just the passive aggressiveness of Aaron Rodgers in the booth just going like, I mean, I threw him the pass. I don't know why he didn't catch it. And then just like cut to him in the cafeteria. And then they cut like him just staring at like his wide receivers. Oh, it'd be so delicious. It'd be so good.
Can you name a wide receiver for the Packers not named Davante Adams?
Can you?
No, because they got rid of that one guy that I kept bringing up.
They got rid of Lazard?
Yeah, he's somewhere else.
They got rid of Geronimo Allison?
Yeah, he's somewhere else too. Wait, Lazard might be back. Allison's gone.
They got rid of Jimmy Graham.
Jimmy Graham's gone. Ooh, Marquez Valdez Scantling. I think he's still there.
Jeff Janis still on the team?
Probably, yeah, of course. Of course, Jeff Janis is still there. Donald Driver coming out of retirement to catch passes from Aaron Rodgers.
He would immediately be their best wide receiver.
Totally correct. We're brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com. Bischoff's Briefs.
I went on the internet this week.
Oh, God.
And I found this.
Bischoff's Briefs.
There's a lot of porn piling up on the internet. It doesn't download itself.
Bischoff's Briefs.
I think I get it.
The NCAA will allow seniors of spring sports to play again next season.
So the NCAA decided that schools can offer the same scholarship benefits or aid, whatever they were getting, to seniors that received it this year. Or schools can give them less or nothing at all. Basically, they can say bye to seniors and not offer them anything. Or give them exactly what they had. Or, hey, here's a half scholarship. They can pretty much do whatever they want. The NCAA is going to relax the amount, the restriction on scholarship players that you can have, which should help the schools out that can actually give out extra aid. But we'll see how many of those there actually are. But I don't think this is going to play out very well for most of the players or seniors, I should say. I think ultimately, if you have a really good senior, that player is going to be back. But if you're not that great, we'll see you later. We don't have anything to offer you because they can do it on a case on a player by player basis. They can say this guy, yep, we're giving you a full ride again. Or they can say, we'll offer you 10% of your scholarship again.
Is there any transfer for the player? Like if they choose to
Well, if you're a senior that graduated, yeah. Just regular transfer.
Grad transfer. Yeah.
For everybody else, I don't think there's... I mean, maybe, but for everybody else, I don't think so.
Let's say you're like a sixth or seventh year senior, like most people I know.
And what?
And can you just keep... Can you...
I mean, if you graduated, yeah, you can transfer.
But no. And play the next you can year. Only play at your school that you were at.
Yeah, unless you're a grad transfer.
Oh, man. There goes my plan of Iona winning the...
Well, if your school says no, thank you, and you have a year of eligibility left, you can probably get a waiver to play right away. Same, it's the reason Trey Woodbury played at Utah Valley this year. Like, if your school says, we don't have room for you, you can get a waiver to play right away. So, conceivably, yes, these schools, but...
We need to keep an eye on how many scholarships UNLV baseball has, because I want them to be loaded next year.
Yeah, we'll see. But it is just for spring sports. It's not for winter sports. So this isn't for basketball. It is for baseball, softball, tennis, track and field. And they are letting non-seniors basically get another year or two. So the NCAA, the way the NCAA works is you have 4 years of eligibility to play five. You have to play those 4 years over the course of five seasons. They're basically just saying, all right, this season didn't happen. It does not count against a year of your eligibility. It counts against one of your 5 years to play it, but you still have this year, isn't it? You didn't lose a year of eligibility because of this year.
So it's the inverse of the service time
rule. Yes, the exact opposite of what Major League Baseball is doing, which actually both are good for the players.
For once. The 2021 NFL draft is locked into Cleveland.
Amber Dixon of News 3 reporting on the NFL draft's future locations. 2021 is in Cleveland, according to NFL PR. That's not changing. 2023 is in Kansas City. But that leaves 2022 as an open year of the NFL draft that could potentially come back to Las Vegas, since it was supposed to be here in April, and it's not going to be here in April. I have no idea how, like, if they were any stage along of awarding the 2022 draft, like, there might be a city that was a front runner. No idea, but it would make sense to have it in Vegas. Like, it's already planned out. We've already got the boats for the Bellagio ready to go.
Yeah, and also, why is it that, like, did Kansas City go, hold on?
I don't know. I don't know why they skipped the year.
Give us a bit?
I mean, it's the draft, so it's not that big of a deal. I don't know what's happening in Kansas City in 2022 that they couldn't have it that year.
What's funny is Kansas City, New Orleans, and Las Vegas are homes of some of the few areas where you can just have an open container and wander the street.
Why is Kansas City like that?
Power's light!
Oh, my God. I didn't know it was like that in Kansas City.
Yeah, there's a whole section where it's just like you can wander around here with an open container.
That's where the draft is going to rotate through those three places.
I mean, if you were smart, that's how you do it. The Bengals released cornerback Dre Kirkpatrick.
So the Bengals saved about $8 million in cap space with that move. I am very curious if the Raiders want him. They were in the market for nearly every cornerback at the start of free agency. Now there's a new one available. Kirkpatrick has been a starting cornerback for the Bengals for a while now. But the downside of Dre Kirkpatrick, he's been hurt each of the last two seasons. He only played in six games last year due to a knee injury, and he wasn't very good in those six games. The average quarterback rating last year in the NFL was 91. When he was targeted, it was 122. But again, it was only six games. He'll be 31 in October, though, and he made $9 million last year. So there's a chance he's not going to be that cheap, and the Raiders don't have, or at least appear to have, very much cap space left without making some other moves. The good thing about Kirkpatrick, though, is two seasons ago, when he played in 14 games, almost a full year, his quarterback rating against was 10 points better than the league average. He only allowed 50% of the targets to be caught, and he has 10 picks in 99 career games. So he would certainly be, what he's done in his career would certainly be an improvement in the Raiders secondary, a unit that might not be very good this season. Dre Kirkpatrick should be good enough to elevate it. The question is, does it fit? And the main question I would have, is he better than Eli Apple? Because they brought in Eli Apple. They didn't really want Eli Apple to be their starting cornerback. If they draft one in the first round, Eli Apple might still not be their starting cornerback. So would you bring in Dre Kirkpatrick if you don't rate him higher than Eli Apple? Because Eli Apple's much younger. Eli Apple doesn't have the injury history. And Eli Apple is probably going to be cheaper. Or I guess it might be the same. But Dre Kirkpatrick might not be, if you sign him, it's not like, oh, he's guaranteed a starter, right? That's not really what you're getting. You're getting essentially another Eli Apple, and I don't know that that's worth it to add to the team.
I'm just really disappointed. I just found out Pac-Man Jones is retired.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
Because that's another very good choice. Like, as long as you're taking flyers on former Bengals.
There is, and the former Bengal thing is another aspect because Paul Gunther was his defensive coordinator for 3 years. He was there as the linebacker coach when they drafted Dre Kirkpatrick. So he's known Dre Kirkpatrick for a while. So that could be a reason why he actually comes in. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it would make the secondary better if you can sign him for cheap. probably better to go ahead and do it. But if he's going to cost you $6-7 million, then you probably got to like move Gabe Jackson or something. Probably not worth it at that stage.
And again, I was just thinking Pac-Man Jones. He's never had a problem in a casino before, so we'll see if that works
out. They're all closed now. It'll be fine.
Vance Jackson and J.J. Caldwell are transferring out of New Mexico.
So that's according to Jeff Goodman. Jeff Goodman keeps a list of transfers every year in college basketball. Right now, 20 from Mountain West schools. Those are the first two from New Mexico. UNLV has three. Wyoming has three. Fresno State has four. And Air Force has three. So UNLV, not the most in the Mountain West.
San Diego?
I don't think San Diego State has one, maybe, or zero.
Wow. No one wants to leave that program.
Yeah. Why would you? Malachi Flynn might go pro. They might lose some to the pro ranks.
Going to be very good in Turkey. Are either of these two guys the guys that were?
Yes, Vance Jackson was in trouble throughout the year.
Is he one of the ones who was suspected of rape, or was he the DUI?
I'm going to have to say I don't know because I don't remember exactly which players did what throughout the season.
Okay. So that's got to be a hard transfer. Is there a last chance you for basketball?
No, it was New Mexico.
Wait, are you kidding?
I mean, you saw the roster. Oh, this all right, year, right?
No, I thought. Okay, yes. Yes. All right. Fair enough. Good God. Air Force is hiring Joe Scott to be its next head basketball coach.
John Rothstein reporting that Joe Scott has already coached at Air Force. 2000 to 2004, he was the head coach. They were 51-63 when he was there. That's a 45% win percentage. So they fired Dave Filipovich, who won 42% of his games, to hire a guy that won 45% of his games at Air Force. Now, he did take Air Force to the NCAA tournament. His last year, they went 22-7, but they were not very good in the first 3 years that Joe Scott was there. It's an interesting hire and probably going to be an incredibly boring hire because Joe Scott, when he's been a head coach, they play extremely slow and they run the Princeton offense.
Oh, I was hoping they'd run the triple option.
To let you know, KenPom tweeted out that Anthony Bennett, the head coach of Virginia, his tweet about this was Anthony Bennett's days as the slowest paced head coach in the country are numbered because Joe Scott is here to play the slowest basketball you've ever seen in your life. Now, he's been a few years since he was a head coach. He was an assistant the last couple of years, not running a slow Princeton offense. So maybe there's some change, but you're probably going to get really slow, really boring Air Force basketball games.
Can we make the shot clock like 20 seconds?
Just for those games, yes.
Just for the Mountain West.
18-second shot clocks in the Mountain West. You better get it up and shoot.
Just dribble, man.
All right, joining us next is Ginny Ruiz, the new head coach for UNLV Women's Soccer.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Tyler Bischoff is
the dumbest smart person I have ever met in my life.
Technically Correct.
UNLV has a new head coach for the women's soccer team. Ginny Ruiz Williams was hired in December, and she joins us now. Ginny, what's it like coming back to UNLV and coach? You played here for a while. What's it like to come back?
I am so thrilled, so pumped. I love it here. This is like, I have deep, deep, deep pockets full of love for this university. When I hear the Rebels, like, it invokes so much, it stirs so much inside of me. So I am so grateful and so excited to be here.
What did you see that was the most different? Like, you come back and something that was different that surprised you?
I think, let's see, it's kind of a familiar feeling, but there's just been so much growth and newness, but that's Vegas, and that's what's exciting about being here, where things get, revitalized and facelifted, and so that's like an exciting part, but a very, there's a good familiar piece to it, so not much, just more growth, more upward buildings. The hospitality building at UNLV is is beautiful. Rebel Grounds, the best coffee I've had, and I recently came from the Pacific Northwest, so that's a big, exciting thing.
That's a big compliment. So, okay, what is it like right now coaching or trying to coach during the coronavirus outbreak?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we were super fortunate because we were actually able to get 3 spring games in and kind of gave the group just enough of a taste to feed their hunger. It's a really phenomenal group of women with like a strong will. They want to do better, be better, and represent this city that they love. So we're looking at the COVID-19 situation as just an opportunity to continue reinforcing our core values, team identity, helping them to create like positive habits. And our university has been phenomenal, and the leadership of Desiree and the athletic department has been just so incredible the way they've attacked everything. So we're looking again at it as opportunity to be better. You know, sports is all about adversity and overcoming. There's hustle and hurt, sacrifice and success, and heartache and joy, and it's all messed together. So it's just a bit of a stepping stone and not a stumbling block. So I'm still coaching them, and we're doing virtual workouts, virtual meetings, setting up accountability partners, and we're just tackling it a different way. But we're still coaching the player and the person, each individual.
Do all of your players at least have a soccer ball at home they can kick around with themselves?
Yes, that was one of the first things I said during our Zoom call with them was, if you don't have a ball, we will get you a ball. We will airdrop a ball, whatever we need to do. But they confidently all gave me a thumbs up. They all have balls.
Is anybody talented enough to fly a drone with a soccer ball on it to drop it into whoever needs one?
I don't know. I'll throw it out to them to see who could do that. That would be really talented.
It's got to be, I think, even more so for you in particular. It's not great that you're finally a first-time head coach and you get a chance to lead a program, and then you're isolated at home and part of the spring is wiped out and you don't actually get to do the coaching normally.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's definitely, you know, the good thing is it's kind of like parenting. You know, you have a kid and no one, you get all this advice about how to do it, but you know, you've never done it before, and and you don't get it like a practice run, right? There it is. There's your kid and you're raising them. So this is the team. And like I said, the will with this group of women, I mean, there's no other veteran coach that has gone through this. Like, we're all going through this for the first time. And I have, I mean, I am so passionate about this university and coaching that I think my energy, and I'm just so excited. And so I'm just like, all right, here we go. Let's roll with it. Let's go.
How are your kids during this isolation?
My, you know what? I'm really fortunate because we actually are a homeschooling family already. So it hasn't really changed our day to day.
Wow. You were as prepared for this as possible, huh?
Yeah, I'm ready. I was ready.
I was literally going to ask, what was tougher, teaching in inner city Los Angeles or homeschooling? But apparently homeschooling is just like, yeah, I do that anyway.
Oh my goodness. Good for you for knowing about that. Yeah, homeschooling is a challenge, like in general, but yeah, we started kind of doing it with, when I went back, I went from teaching in the inner city and then I went back to playing, internationally, and homeschooling worked with our travel schedule, and, we just rolled with it, and it's been great.
Do you have a yard at home?
I have, probably a 5x5, patch of turf and some rocks.
Okay. Cause like I grew up in Mississippi and I always had a basketball hoop and I always had like a yard. I hated it cause I had to cut the grass every week, but I always had a yard. I would much rather be isolated there than here, because here I can't go outside and do anything. Like, I wish I had a basketball hoop just to go shoot outside or something.
Yeah. 100%. I agree with you.
I totally disagree. There's no humidity here, so you can go outside and like...
Not the weather itself, just the idea of having somewhere to walk outside of my house.
I love that. I disagree because I love that humidity. I lived in Nashville for a little bit, and man, the way, I'm just going to be a little vain right now, the way that humidity feels on your skin makes you feel so young.
I don't think I've ever heard someone say they love humidity.
Yeah, I've never heard someone...
That's me. I love it. I love it.
Born in Nashville and like lived in Missouri, you couldn't pay me to walk through humidity right now.
It's It's the worst. I genuinely don't like it. I really hate humidity. Like, it's so much better here.
You like the dry heat?
Just anything that doesn't... Yeah.
A little bit more.
It's not like I'm swimming through syrup to get to my car when I walk outside. Like,
I'm not walking through butter.
Yeah, that's terrible. So one other thing that we saw you posted with your kids, you guys kept Reading Week alive with videos on social media. Explain to us the book that you picked to read.
Oh, well, yeah, that was just a phenomenal... Right when this all started, Desiree wanted to, like, do something for the community. And I don't know who in our amazing athletic department came up with continuing Nevada Reading Week. But so when they asked me to do it, we had just went to the library and we got a book called Rock, Paper, Scissors. So we went with that one.
What is the moral of this Rock, Paper, Scissors book?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know what the moral of it. I think it is probably compete if I'm reading into it.
See, I was going to say that the rock beats scissors and paper covers rock, but
right. But now it's a story, and you've got all three of them. So who wins?
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's just an epic battle at the end, and they continue the cycle of rock, paper, scissors. It keeps going.
It's a never ending cycle. They're trapped in the battle of rock, paper, scissors. Do they ever question if they don't want to fight anymore?
No, that doesn't happen. That's probably going to be the sequel.
it's like the Fast and the Furious franchise where, like, oh, now they're going to all team up and they're going to go take on something else.
New UNLV women's soccer coach Jenny Ruiz Williams with us. Can you give us, what is your best story from the 2015 World Cup when you played with Mexico?
Oh my goodness, you got me. The best story. I don't know if I have like a really exciting, gosh, I think just the feeling of like, you know, the World Cup only happens every 4 years. And if you're a soccer player, it's like mic drop career, like just walk off the field. Like you did it. You got to play in a World Cup. So, I mean, it's like a dream come true. So like walking on the field, hearing your anthem, just battling with your teammates, like nothing beats that. I mean, it was just so magical. So amazing. I'm so grateful I got the opportunity to do that.
I know last spring, the UNLV women's soccer team played Argentina in a friendly. Did you guys have anything like that scheduled for this spring?
We did. We were going to do a repeat game against Argentina, but so that obviously was canceled. Yeah.
That's probably for the best. You guys should probably stop punishing Argentina.
They beat them last year. 1-0.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
They did. They did an excellent job. Yeah. So that would have been a big shoes to fill for me. So
she is Jenny Ruiz Williams. Jenny, we appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
So there's the new head coach for UNLV women's soccer. Hopefully their season starts up in late August. That is when it would start in a normal year. So hopefully we get there. Actually, we talk so much about college football and the fear that athletic departments have of if that's going to happen. Soccer is the first sport that happened. Well, volleyball is the first sport that happened, then soccer. So those are the first two that actually happen in like mid to late August before football season gets going. So those are the first sort of fall sports that we'll see the impact of if coronavirus keeps happening then.
I'm just like trying to remember when I was at UNLV going like, yep, there was volleyball. Yeah, all right. There was a like week there in like, I want to say early October, where I was just like men's soccer, women's soccer, volleyball, football. Like my entire week, I could just go, I don't have to, I just keep going to sports.
I think I want to say volleyball starts 2 weeks before classes start, I think, is when the season actually starts. And UNLV volleyball usually hosts like 74 tournaments.
The UNLV volleyball team knew me well as, why is there a weird dude sitting by himself in the corner?
There might be a lot of weird dudes at volleyball games.
Oh.
Coming up next, 30th anniversary of UNLV beating Georgia Tech in the Final Four.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter at @Bischoff_Tyler.
That was an absolutely garbage call.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Were there any garbage calls in 1990?
That's sort of what I was wondering, is like, are we going to get, how egregious on a game that's over, what, 30 years old? No, exactly 30 years old. Would a call have to be for you on stream to go, that was an absolute garbage call?
That'd be pretty bad. Ball State got screwed a little. You kept screaming,
stop pressing!
Oh, that's the dumbest press I've ever seen in my life. I don't know what Loyola Marymount's doing. Ball State did get a little bit screwed. They got called for an intentional foul that probably wasn't an intentional foul. Like, they didn't show a replay, so you couldn't, in the regular camera angle, didn't really catch it. So Ball State might have gotten screwed on a garbage call. But yeah, it was a garbage press by Loyola Marymount. So what we've been doing, if you haven't been paying attention, is the 30th anniversary of every UNLV NCAA tournament game from their run in 1990. We are rewatching those on Twitter and Periscope. We're going to do that tonight at 7 p.m.
I'm so excited.
At @Bischoff_Tyler, come by. And tonight at 7, you can watch UNLV and Georgia Tech. This is the Final Four game. This is the first Final Four win for UNLV. This game should be pretty fun. Like, if we look at the fun meter of these tournament games so far, the Ohio State game, incredibly boring. Like, it wasn't up-tempo. It was both teams playing half-court, trying to post up the entire time. Brutal. Ball State game was mostly a half-court game, but we got some Stacey Augmon in transition. We got a few great plays and great dunks, so the Ball State game was pretty fun. Loyola Marymount was
bonkers.
Yeah, like, everything was just, let's go, because Loyola Marymount's like, we're pressing with four guys the whole time, and all you got to do is throw one pass, and you're going to get a layup. So it was pretty fun. This game, both teams are over 80, so there should be some scoring somewhere in between Loyola Marymount and Ohio State. What I'm curious about, I know nothing about this game. And, like, I'm not 30 years old, so it's not like I was alive to watch it. But aside from the first round win over the 16 seed, this is, like, the least talked about game from that run. Like, the Ball State game was the close game. Loyola Marymount was the ridiculously fast-paced game. Duke was the title blowout game. Like, what happened in this game? Did anything happen? Like, did anything noteworthy happen in this game? Like, I don't know. No one ever talks about the win over Georgia Tech in the Final Four. Like, it's the forgotten game of this run. So I have literally no idea. I know they win. That's about it. I don't know anything else that happens in this game. Because, like, I knew the Ball State game was close. I knew the Loyola Marymount score was ridiculous, right? And I know the title game is a blowout and hilarious, but I don't know anything about this. And it was a Final Four game. And it's, like, the fourth most popular game from that run. It's just kind of weird. I am a little worried someone's going to try to steal my idea. It wasn't my idea to begin with. I stole it from somebody else, but
No, it was your idea.
But UNLV already kind of stole it, because we've been streaming all of these games from the 1990 NCAA tournament on the 30th anniversaries, and we're leading up to the national championship game, which will be on Thursday. But UNLV kind of stole the idea, because they did it with the 2007 Mountain West Tournament championship game last week. They beat BYU. They had Curtis Terry and Lindy LaRock and Kevin Kruger commenting on it. They better not come for my title game. That's all I'm saying. Better back off.
Or you snipe their guests, you get Kevin Kruger and Lindy LaRock and Curtis Terry on your stream. So they're like, who do we get to do our stream? Nobody. Ha!
I don't know if they'd use them again, though. Like, they use those guys because they played in that game. Obviously not Lindy LaRock, but Curtis Terry and Kevin Kruger were on that team.
Yeah, what was she, like, the play-by-play person?
She grew up as a UNLV fan. Like, that was, okay. Yeah, well, team fair. She watched growing up, so.
Oh, so she was probably starstruck. She was like, that's Kevin Kruger, and you're Curtis Terry. And there you are on screen!
Is anybody starstruck by Curtis Terry anymore?
Oh, man. Why are you swiping at Curtis Terry?
Who doesn't want to swipe Curtis Terry? It's great. It's wonderful.
He seems like a nice dude.
Curtis Terry and Caleb Herring. Bring it on. I want both of them.
One time during a game that I was sitting in the press row, a woman walked by during game action and just started yelling Curtis at him. Well, he's commentating on the game,
and he
full on finishes his sentence, turns around, like, shakes her hand, and is like, it's really good to see you. Like, you're in the middle of a game.
Nope, it's fine. Not important. Just keep yelling. What do you mean? We did a show inside a soccer net. Distractions are fine. Way more entertaining that way, too. Show's terrible. All right. Shows. Listen, when we did the show in the soccer net from lights practice, that was the worst show ever. Like, as far as us talking and doing a show.
Yes.
It was terrible, but it was hilarious. The reason it was terrible is hilarious.
I can't believe we didn't get more gifts out of that. Especially me ducking when there was no soccer ball coming.
We did have that gift, didn't we?
Well, it didn't get as much traction.
Oh, okay. You're disappointed. The one of me making a save did, though. That was a very important gift.
Oh, yeah, so you could use it?
Yes. A great goalie. One of the best goalies in Lights FC history. At least top five.
Who do you think wins tonight?
Georgia Tech. Got the upset.
Okay. So it's next year they win against Duke.
Yeah, right? Isn't it?
Or is next year the setup year?
Maybe they never win.
Who do we need to interview next year during this time whenever they cancel the NCAA tournament about the conspiracy theories of, yeah, well, UNLV, because Tark was he made the NCAA mad. And so they set him up.
I actually would love to do this with the 1991 NCAA tournament run, because that team was really good and blew everybody out. And
except for Duke.
Then they lost to Duke. Like, it's one of the biggest upsets in college basketball history, but I don't think anybody would watch it. hey, come relive the worst moment in UNLV basketball history.
Hey, remember how the team that won the national championship looked like it was going to be a repeat? Has that ever happened?
It would have been. So, if they had won the national title in 91, they would have had, what would it have been at that point? I think a 47-game winning streak, back-to-back national champions, and an undefeated season in which they won the national championship. And that year, before they lost to Duke, I think their closest margin of victory was 7 points. They had more wins by 20 points than they did by single digits. They destroyed everyone that they played.
Okay, see, now I'm starting to believe the conspiracy theory.
Right, and you should. So, if they win that game, it's the best two-year stretch in, college basketball history.
And they're a mid-major still?
Yeah, best two-year stretch.
They've got four letters in their name.
What does that have to do with anything? Duke has four letters in its name.
No, I'm saying, there's not a lot of teams.
Does anybody else have four letters? UTEP?
UMKC?
Does anybody have five?
I bet somewhere.
I mean, somewhere somebody has five, but is there a Division I school with five? I don't know. Does anybody have five letters as an acronym? UNLV, UMKC, UTEP. Stuck on UAB. Nobody's got five, right?